You are listening to Animated Indulgence, the explicit and opinionated podcast where grown men talk about cartoons. Each episode, we'll pick apart, analyze, and dissect an animated series or movie.
Warning, there will be spoilers, even potentially for shows and movies that are not the topic at hand.
We may watch cartoons, but we don't watch our language. Discretion is advised. Welcome, listeners, to Animated Indulgence, where grown men watch cartoons. Today, we will be focusing on the brand new Netflix exclusive Castlevania series. I am Airhammer.
I'm Deus.
And I'm Majoric.
So, where do we want to begin?
Well, spoiler free is in order for this one.
Okay. So, for those that haven't watched and are familiar with the games, like, we're going to focus more on the games later, but the general idea of this series that it focuses the events of Castlevania 3 Dracula's Curse on NES.
Loosely.
It's an atmospheric and satisfyingly brutal narrative drama. I don't think there's a lack of humor in it, but it is not a comedy show.
Definitely not. Lots of language, lots of gore.
Throwaway jokes and silly nonsense, but yeah, you're right. Not a comedy. There's definitely lots of gore as well. Maybe not as frequently, but along the lines of what we saw in Attack on Titan. There's ripped up, torn up bodies all over the place.
It originally follows a bit of prologue with Dracula himself, and then goes on, for the most part, to follow Trevor Belmont in his journey.
Or the setup to a journey. I guess that's one thing we could point out here, and spoiler-free, in that it's very much a prologue. It's very much a season one point, or what'd you call it? 0.5 or whatever, the other day?
Yeah, it's a very short season one. I believe they marked the first four episodes of season one. I don't really buy into that. There's already been 8 episodes greenlit. I think they're going to label them season 2, but I'm going to call those season 1 part 2.
Yeah.
It feels very short. It is the length of a movie. If you are familiar with the games, if you're familiar with the franchise, you're going to see a lot of references to people, places, and events from the video games. And they're all going to be strung together remarkably coherently. I was really impressed with this.
Yeah, there's a lot of the vague small references to very obscure things in the games too, so that's neat.
Even set pieces that you wouldn't expect from later games get some references.
It has a fairly decent voice cast. I enjoyed it.
It does, yes. Yeah. The pacing is also very excellent on this one. It goes by fairly quick. Even though you only have 4 episodes, you get a fairly complete story, including the prologue with Dracula.
Like you said, we only have 4 episodes for season 1, and basically all of it is used to very good effect. There's very little wasted airtime. Even the stuff that's not directly involved with the main plot and story is at least comical or funny or interesting or world-building. It's no wasted airtime, is how I'd put it.
I wouldn't say it ever drags on. Did you guys ever feel like there was any part that drug on or caught up?
Not particularly. I know some people were wanting more action, but I felt it was a nice balance, so.
I think it was a very well-paced show. I wouldn't want it to be purely action. There's a lot of backstory for them to cover and a lot of setup for them to describe and clarify. There's some assumptions made about Castlevania and a lot of gaps to fill, so I was quite happy with that. It is inspired, of course, by classic horror. I think it only really takes the gore from the horror and doesn't really give you the suspense or thrill factor from horror. So if you're a super fan of horror and expect an old-fashioned vampire movie, this will be different. I don't think it's bad in that sense. I've never been much of a horror fan, though, so I can't comment on that.
Yeah, it's not very... It's not... You're right. It's not suspenseful or scary. It's more action-based, more world-building-based. It's not... There's not a lot of, like... The monsters are very big and obvious. They're there, and it's not jump-scare type stuff. It's not spooky in the sense that it's necessarily... Yeah, I guess you put it best. It's not suspenseful.
The monsters are fearsome, though. They certainly have a menace to them. There's one particular scene that I recall where the monsters are especially fearsome, even though you see them and they're walking directly at the characters. That is well made because it makes them feel like they're credible. Yeah. So you do get some very worthwhile adversaries in the action scenes. In fact, you see a lot of stuff in this. You see corrupt officials, demons, oppressed peasants oppressing other peasants, Dracula himself. Pretty well rounded for the short length.
Touches on a lot of stuff for something that its airtime comes in under 2 hours.
You also see most of the heroes from the game. Castlevania 3 is well known for having multiple playable characters, and you see the majority of those in the first few episodes, which is impressive because even in the game it takes a while to get into some of them.
Mm-hmm. And they're all interesting and unique, so that's a nice bonus. Not much overlap in the way of, like I said, the characters are unique.
None of the characters feel bland.
Yeah.
I would love to tell more here in the spoiler-free, because this is the part where we establish it, but there's such little meat on the bones, given the short duration of the 4 episodes. It would be difficult to get too in-depth with this without spoiling. Suffice to say that you will not see Trevor show down with Dracula at the end of the first season. It's just not enough time.
Like I said, a lot of this is kind of feels like a prologue or a build-up to something more, which we will get in Season 2.
We did mention that there's lots of characters from the games. There's one that does not make an appearance, and I'm going to assume that he shows up in the next set of episodes.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Actually, can we go over that real quick? Can we just give a basic rundown of who the player characters from the game are and sort of describe them in brief before we go in depth later in the podcast? I think a lot of the listeners might appreciate hearing about the player characters and how they're portrayed.
Yeah, sure.
Would you guys like to talk about Trevor first? Trevor is a pretty big character in the game.
Trevor is the main character in Castlevania 3. He's the last descendant of a famous yet banished family, the Belmonts.
He is displeased with how he has been treated, and a lot of the peasants don't particularly care for his family because of his banishment. They sort of take what's happened to him as just desserts. So there's definitely some friction between Trevor and the people he's supposed to be protecting, who don't really want his protection. He's kind of an asshole. Actually, he's a huge asshole.
Yeah.
He's got this quality of the lovable scoundrel going on.
Very kind of anti-hero.
Very much.
And then we have, we also have Sphera? Sphira? Or whatever.
Sypha. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, she's a kind of a apprentice, priesty, wizardy character. I don't want to go like.
She knows magic.
She's a independent female character who does not care for the rude mannerisms of Trevor at all. They almost instantly get in a fight over the course of action she should take as soon as she's found. As soon as Trevor finds her location, speaks to her, the first thing they do is get in an argument. And it shows that she's definitely more compassionate than he is.
She's also very headstrong, kind of like he is, and she had to be convinced and talked into going against what she wanted to do already. Like I said, I'm trying to avoid spoilers.
Say when they meet, their quests are at ends. They're in opposition to each other.
Yeah.
And they have to reason it out between two very, very stubborn individuals.
And the last playable character that was in the games that is featured in the show so far is Alucard.
You see him briefly at the end of episode 1. You don't even get to really see him. You hear him speak to his father. Yeah. And you can tell right away that he is instantly opposed to Dracula, which is a good setup because we don't see him again. And it's very fortunate that they had this moment to sort of show you his motives and why he's doing what he's doing. It's very brief, but it's very important to the narrative. And I am certainly happy that he was included at all. I would have thought we'd have to wait a long time to even get a glimpse of him.
It's definitely a nice touch. He's a big staple, if you will, of the Castlevania world. A fan favorite. So it was nice to get him so early.
And there's a huge cast of supplemental characters that are not from the games, but are very appreciated. This really, really does grow on the concept of early Castlevania games more than I would have thought possible. Without ruining anything, it's done a wonderful job of connecting the dots.
It's definitely got some nice world building in it.
Warning, the spoiler-free section is now over. Continue listening at your own risk.
This is our expectations for the new Netflix original series, Castlevania. Is that just, that's its full title, right? Just Netflix Castlevania. Just calling
it. That's what we know of it. I don't know.
This, for record, this recording is taking place June 18th, a little under a month from when the show is supposed to release, and we've only seen one trailer, but we know we're going to cover it. Yeah, we don't know much about it yet, so we don't really know what to expect. It's an anime. It's probably going to be violent. What do you think?
Well, it's Castlevania. I'm expecting monsters and Medusa heads and vampires and Frankensteins.
So many skeletons.
Transylvanian things and skeletons and deaths and some kind of Belmont as our hero.
Yeah. Alucard will have to make a show. Alucard's going to be there somehow. I wonder how they're going to handle Dracula. We haven't heard Dracula's voice yet. You can't have such an iconic character as Dracula and not have a solid voice actor, so that's gonna be something to look forward to. What are your thoughts so far, Deus?
Well, it looks like it's got elements from Castlevania 3, but for all we know, that could be a flashback in episode 1 and they're just teasing us. I think we'll at least get a couple scenes with Castlevania 3 characters. Knowing that, we'll likely see at least some of we'll see at least some of the characters and plot lines from the video game, roughly estimated. I would like to see them finally tie in some of the Bram Stoker novel. I would like to see them tie in some of the other monsters and make use of that lore. If they're going to have Frankenstein around, have it make sense. I also feel that most of the artwork really needs to be exquisite. What we've seen has been good, but Castlevania is known for really baroque, elegant backgrounds. The scenery, the atmosphere is
it has
Victorian
to have,
horror.
Yeah, a lot of it has to be. Yeah, Victorian's a good word for it. Elegant is the word I was going to go for. It has to have like a elegant, upper-class type setting. A big mansion. There has to be a big mansion, right?
Castlevania itself has to be an all-star, so they can't skimp on any of the art. The background can't be bad, but it also can't outshine the characters. We've all seen some of the gorgeous art that's come out in recent years. I feel like that's going to have to be pushed forward
to make
it feel like Castlevania.
You mentioned the Bram Stoker's Dracula, and on top of that, I'd like to see hints of all of the old-time monster baddies, because they're all part of Castlevania in a way, right? Fucking Dracula has the fucking mummy in one of the games, and there's werewolves running around, and Frankenstein's monster and shit. That'd be all cool if they could tie that shit in. I'd like to see them poke jokes at the silliness that happened in the games, while still being I don't want it to entirely forget its gaming history, and it'd be a shame if it did.
At the risk of turning this from expectations to a wish list, I'd like to see...
We've already kind of gone into that.
Well, I suppose so. I'd like to see at least one reference to the Helsing series. I feel like that has been the anime vampire series.
Yeah, Castlevania kind of passed the torch. Castlevania was the vampire franchise for a long time. The serious non-Twilight vampire franchise for a long time, right? And it kind of passed the torch to Helsing for a while.
I suppose that is a solid expectation. I expect a serious drama and not some sort of comedy or parody show.
Yeah.
I would be very shocked if I saw a comedy or parody show. I would be disappointed at first if I got a comedy, but I'm committed to watching it at this point. So if it's a good comedy, all right, I'll judge it as a good comedy and just be pissed off at the marketing for it.
Yeah. Do you expect to see some skeletons and spookums from the games?
I don't want it to follow the games too strictly, personally.
I don't think it should follow the games too strongly. I'd like to see acknowledgments of the games. I guess that's where I'd set it there. I don't want it to forget the fact that it's from a video game.
Yeah, all we need is for him to go through an alternate dimensional portal and wind up next to his Captain N counterpart.
That's if we get Simon Belmont. We don't even know that. We could be following Alucard, and Alucard saying he's going to kill Dracula.
Yeah, that's true.
Be Trevor, could be Richter.
It's going to be a Belmont. I'm pretty confident. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Alucard, but I feel pretty confident on it being a Belmont, because it seems like the obvious choice. Probably Simon, the most iconic. So I guess that's it. That's our expectations.
Yep.
Anything else?
Blood. I expect blood to be a theme.
Yeah, blood and violence. Probably throw some sex in there too. What's the rating?
Giggity.
Rated G for giggity.
I remember saying in expectations that that I wanted Dracula's voice actor to be good. we had to have a good voice actor, and we really did get good voice cast all around, so that's nice. So I'm glad that the at least committed to, because like we talked about, the show has quite a bit of dialogue, and you're gonna have to listen to the characters a lot, and it's nice to have decently talented and interesting sounding characters to listen to. So,
rated G for goat fucking. Yeah, I was not expecting it to be as crude as it was, but I appreciate that they went whole hog on making it adult and mature. They instantly let you know that this was going to be for a mature audience, and it paid off. I think the mature tone definitely worked better with the subject matter. I don't think a lighthearted or kid-friendly show would have been even half as good.
Yeah. We talked about the possibility of it being kind of a comedy or a jokey type show, and we would have been disappointed, and I think we could really hammer home that point now. Now that we've seen what it is, and we're all relatively happy with it, it would have been a really big disappointment to have something less dramatic, less serious toned.
It met most of my expectations, I would say, and then went well and beyond what I thought possible for world building. I thought we would get a very narrow scope that barely had anything to do with the game, and instead we had so many references strung together in a coherent way. It was beautiful.
Yeah. I am a little disappointed with my... I expected a lot more of the big baddies, maybe. But I didn't... I guess when I recorded expectations, I didn't realize we were only getting 4 episodes. I was say, Frankenstein or the mummy or a werewolf.
I was expecting between 8 and 13 episodes. Getting 4 was a huge disappointment for me, and I think did devalue my overall impression of the show. What I saw was really good, but it didn't have the time to imprint on me.
Yeah, as I haven't really played the games, my expectations were kind of low. I was basically talking about I'd like to see Dracula and Belmont, and I got that. As I said, I really enjoyed the voice cast. They stood out quite a bit. I, at first, wasn't expecting it to be as dark as it was. But then thinking of other cartoons and anime of basically the same kind of quality of the last few years, then, yeah, I guess I was expecting it to be maybe on par with those. And it somewhat was. Yeah, it all came together pretty well.
It's hard to say if it met our expectations just yet, given the short run. And I think that's going to be a common thing. We're going to keep coming back to, it's only 4 episodes. It's only 4 episodes. We're going to repeat this throughout segments. Would you like to move on?
No, I think I'm ready for characters, yeah.
Let's start with the big guy himself. Let's start with Dracula. That's what we're here watching this for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We actually got to see some Dracula in the first four episodes. There's an entire half an episode, maybe more, devoted just to Dracula. Thank you.
Well, in my opinion, I was going to go on this later, too. I talked about this with when I was rewatching it the other night. I talked about it with Gog, a friend of ours, and I think that if someone had released just the first episode up until the point where right before Simon is Trevor is introduced, I thought that would have been an amazing little fan film or something right there, like just Dracula meeting his wife and her getting burnt and the whole scene. Like the whole bit with just Dracula's backstory, it's great. Like it's the most iconic part of the whole four episodes we've got so far to me. So Dracula, they did really well. His character is really great. His voice is great. They made you feel for the bad guy. It's really nice. Dracula's Absolutely. Character's done really well.
Mm-hmm.
His motives are flawed and his logic is obvious, but he is a sympathetic villain in that moment. And being able to understand your villain on some level makes it such a better villain. The fact that Dracula is so mighty and powerful, but it still has a similar emotional state as us, helps identify with him and understand him and helps come to terms with him.
I thought he was pretty badass, and as his character envelops later on following the events with Lisa, I think that his vengeance is justified, and just all his actions and how he speaks and how he moves, it all just works so well. He's voiced by Graham McTavish, who I remember most as the character of Ackerman from season 8 of Red Dwarf. Some others might know him as Dwalin in the Hobbit films. And he also voiced Thundercracker in the War for Cybertron video game.
I don't know what else to say about Dracula. He's exactly what you would want Dracula to be. He is powerful, creepy, almost unknowable, but then knowable on some level. He is a wonderful villain, even with what little screen time he gets in these four episodes. He gets less than an episode, but you get such a connection with him. Excellent work with him.
You briefly mentioned Lisa, and she kind of is like a pair with Dracula in this. Yeah, and Dracula's kind of counterpoint in this show. And really, when you think about it, the entire catalyst for the events of the entire show. Because Dracula was just kind of content to exist in... For as far as we could tell, he was just kind of minding his own business until Lisa came along, right? But she's kind of like the catalyst for the whole show, because, like we said, Lisa is Dracula's wife. She comes along and comes to Dracula's castle in hopes to learning about science and furthering her understanding of medicine so she could help people. She eventually is burned to death as a witch, as the times are. And not by Dracula. By the angry religious people, as the times go, like I said. And that's the catalyst for the whole show. I think it's a really, makes her at least an interesting character.
She is such a tragic character. Her interests were purely to help mankind. She wanted to learn science. She took a big risk going to Dracula's castle to meet Count Dracula just to ask for some aid in her academic studies. The whole purpose was to heal people, to be a doctor. And unfortunately, because of the people's superstition and her disregard for superstition, that clash caused her actions to ultimately doom the entire land to Dracula's demon hordes.
Yeah,
I know that's the greatest tragedy that could have befallen her. It's wonderfully told.
She is possibly the purest, most good character that we've seen in this universe so far. Her last actions, as she is burning to death, is to call out for her husband to forgive the people burning her to death. She is the most pure, good character.
I think there's one other that comes close. Maybe even rivals her.
Okay, I'd like to hear that.
For how little we see of her, I enjoyed the character. I agree with you. Very pure, just wants to increase on her education and so forth and help the people. And just because of one bishop had to be a dick, that humanity is screwed. extremely tragic, and it was sad to see her die the way she did.
Yeah, it's very tragic and heartbreaking.
Let's hope we get some Alucard flashbacks of her in the future.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
You mentioned the bishop. So...
Yeah, the bishop.
Let's move on to the real villain of the story.
Yeah, the bishop of the Christian church. Oh, God, is he an asshole.
The unnamed bishop of, I guess, Greshit? He did move to Greshit.
I can't remember the name of it for the life of me, but he was Tarkavista. He was like an underling, not the archbishop, but like a bishop at Tarkavista. And then he was transferred sometime after the burning of Lisa and before the events of the show. He was transferred to Greshit. Yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah, he's
anti-Lisa.
Anti-Lisa.
Yeah.
He's voiced by Max Headroom himself, Matt Frewer. You might also remember him from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the Dawn of the Dead remake, the Time Traveler, Rasmussen, from that one episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And he's had many different voice acting roles. He plays it well here. At first, if you don't notice, you can hear it. Going back to Dracula, before I even looked up the cast, I thought that Dracula was being played by David Kay. So I was actually surprised to see that it wasn't.
You mentioned that he's anti-Lisa. He is anti-fun, anti-abnormal, anything that's out of the ordinary, anything that does not fall into his very strict regimen of day-to-day faithful life must be not only persecuted but purged. This guy is a zealot, an extreme zealot.
His end was very satisfying.
Yeah, you've built up a good villain, a great antagonist when they get like eaten or when they get squished or when the most terrible thing happens to them. You're just like, oh God, that guy deserved that.
When you cheer for one of Dracula's serial killer demons from hell that are sieging a town just because you hate this guy, you've made a good villain.
He's very
They had
beautiful.
It coming.
The Bishop of Greshit is one of the, I would say, most hated entities in the Castlevania franchise now.
Probably. He's just... they made something so hateable. Yeah, make a stain on a franchise that old. Or not a stain is not the right word, but like a mark is noteworthy.
He's a terrific addition, though. He really sets things in motion. His actions are the ones that twist Lisa's into something so negative. He's the one that spurns Dracula to use every bit of his force. He divides Dracula and Alucard and puts them at odds.
He's one of the big examples of what, in my opinion, what we'll talk about later, is one of the big themes in this show. He's one of the big examples of them.
Absolutely. He's actually more of a symbol than a person, to be honest.
Yeah. Because this show is very much, I'll talk about it later in theme as well, but it's not necessarily anti-religion, but it's anti-organized religion. Anti-big religion, if you will. Quote-unquote big religion. Anti-structured.
Speaking of anti-organized religion, would you guys like to talk about Trevor?
Okay, Trevor Belmont. We're introduced to him as he's getting drunk in a tavern.
Great scene, by the way.
He's trying to spend every little coin that he's got for another beer or ale or whatever they have. And some other guys at the bar happen to notice his family crest, which starts a bar fight. Apparently getting hit in the nuts is a very big thing in this show.
God, right in the Simons.
Three nut shots in four episodes. It's...
Long story short is that if you come across Trevor, you're very likely to be outclassed and lose badly.
He took on three people while drunk.
Yes. I might get this name wrong. He's voiced by Richard Armitage. Played Thorin in the Hobbit films. I think he did pretty well.
A lot of crossover with the Hobbit for whatever reason. It's kind of neat.
Maybe just British actors that like doing dark fantasy.
Yeah.
His family has been either shunned or exiled or killed over the years as they've been working to slay the various vampires and other monsters. And apparently the townspeople, they just want nothing to do with him.
The Belmonts have been excommunicated by the church because they are not against using what quote-unquote unholy or magical or witch-like powers in the fight against Dracula and the fight against evil. That was the reason given for this excommunication, or implied at least.
I think Trevor is an oddity because, for me, his flaws are his interesting aspects and his strengths are a little dull. The fact that he's a really good fighter and is trained at fighting monsters all his life, that's cool, but it's kind of dull. I've seen that before. The fact that he's grown bitter and jaded and that he struggles to care about the people he's protecting now makes him so much more interesting to me and really drives the show. I also appreciate that his catchphrases are shit and I don't care.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of swearing in this series. More than I expected, really.
Indeed. It has some very vulgar language.
It's very era appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Not even enough
to
work.
It's peasant speak.
It is.
You know, low class, like, you know, because like a lot of the characters we see, we do see some upper class, you know, we see the Dracula and Belmont, or Trevor Belmont is of an upper class family, but a lot of the characters we see are like peasants, or people like in the towns, you know, like lower class. They talk, they're crass and they're crude.
In class Belmont fashion, he's armed with a whip, and he's very deadly with it. We managed to see him take out someone's eye and rip off a guy's finger, among other things.
He explodes a demon.
Explodes a demon.
He also does some Indiana Jones-style whip tricks where he will grab onto a beam and do some swings. Also, oddly enough, I'm not sure why, but he's kind of a good jumper.
He's also very handy with the random other weapon. A true Castlevania game fashion, he can pick up a knife and he's pretty good at throwing it, or a cross, or whatever. Or an axe. He throws an axe at one point.
I think that was my feel-good moment of the entire series, when he threw an axe. I was like, yes! I was so happy.
He uses pretty much all the weapons from, or not all of them, but a good chunk of the weapons from the games. Salt, even salt.
I'll love it if in a future episode we see him whip a wall and find a pork chop inside.
That'd be pretty good. Random.
He winds up, I forget exactly what the location was. He goes into a house and falls through the floor a couple of times. Eventually finds himself inside what looks like a tomb or something. And he winds up fighting the X-Men. Cyclops. A Cyclops that can fire lasers out of its eye. And upon taking it out, the Cyclops' victims return to life from stone, and this is where we meet up with Sypha.
Which...
Oh, I thought God, you were talking about Headless Dan.
God pointed out to me that scene is really, really cool, because in Castlevania 3, when you meet Sypha, you fight the Cyclops boss.
Interesting.
So, and she unfreezes, or is unpetrified when you beat the boss, and...
He does not have eye lasers in that, I don't think, but
it is a nice touch.
What? It's freaking cool. One thing I really appreciate about that scene in particular is that Sypha, in her stone form, looks very, very much like she does in the video game. She's got her hood down, and you can't really tell anything about her face. So her identity is a mystery, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's kind of neat.
In that tomb, we see some lights activate, and my first thought was... Are these magical blue flames, or are we suddenly seeing some kind of weird 15th century electricity?
Seems like electricity.
It's electricity.
Was there electricity back then?
That's the whole point. Dracula and Dracula and the vampires are more scientifically advanced.
True. Okay.
And the thing, Trevor recognizes the area down there as belonging to, or at least being associated with vampires, because it met descriptions of what his ancestors wrote about Dracula and Castlevania.
Okay.
So yeah, he recognized it as electricity.
Sypha is not quite a local, but someone who's settled in the city of Greshit, where she is met. She's on a quest in that tomb and fell victim to the Cyclops. Trevor saves her and is immediately at odds with her. She wants to continue her quest. He wants to bring her back to get the hell out of town. So there's instant friction between them. I think the idea that she is a independent and strong female is good, but I also think that in some way she's a little independent to the point of a little annoying. She's offended by Trevor's rudeness, but at no point does she come to grips with the fact that she was nearly dead or that he saved her life. And that, I don't know, her first impression wasn't that strong to me.
I don't know. I think she definitely does come to... She acknowledges that he saves her life. She's very kind of like almost loyal about it at the end when she wanted to... We'll talk about this in a moment, but she wanted to not fight Alucard, though Trevor insisted on it, right? But even after not wanting to fight Alucard, she stood by Trevor when the odds were against Trevor because she's like, that man saved my life.
Oh, no, by the end, she absolutely does come through and presents herself as an amazing character.
Shows a little bit of character growth just in the span of the four episodes, which is...
Yeah, at first she's like, oh, I was a statue. Okay, thank you, but I have stuff to do.
Yeah.
She's voiced by Alejandra Reynoso, who has done the voice of Flora in all of the Winx Club series.
One of the few non-British actresses and actors in the entire series.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who do you guys want to cover next?
The Alucard. Elder.
The Elder.
So, yeah, I guess he would be the leader of the speakers and father or grandfather of Sypha? Grandfather?
Grandfather, yeah. Okay. He is a very
knowledgeable.
I had something I was going for here, but totally drew a blank. Continue. Like, I had something to go on. It's just like, and it just, I kind of felt it drain out of my head.
That's why I make notes, son.
He's voiced by Tony Amendola, who, Mojo, you might remember as Master Braytak from Stargate.
I do. And I did recognize that. A very nice fit.
The Elder Speaker is the one I was talking about earlier when I said there was one person that rivaled Lisa. This guy is a saint.
Oh, yeah.
This guy is pure good. He is the rock that holds together the heroes until they are forged in battle. Until Trevor has to face a vampire, has to face the armies of Dracula, this guy is the one that keeps him in place and keeps him on mission, whether he likes it or not. He is my favorite character out of the series so far. I think he has the best voice performance. He's a standout role for me. As a construct of this show, he's presented extremely well.
I can definitely agree with that. And he was probably is my number two character. I just like the way Dracula is so presented as a whole. He's really well done, especially when you have an attachment to the voice. That's always a little extra fun to it. You're right. He's just as pure good as Lisa. He's like, people were beating the shit out of him or threatening to beat the crap out of him. And the first thing he's like, you didn't have to do that. I could have handled it. We didn't have to do account to violence, even though those guys were about to beat the crap out of him. He's very full of forgiveness and thinks about other people before himself.
Yeah, he's a wonderful character. I hope we get to see more of him. I doubt we'll see much after whatever happens in Gretchen, but for now, it seems like we're going to see a little bit more of him, and I'm very pleased by that. Speaking of the moment where he was threatened, I think some of the minor characters are done extraordinarily well. The one, I want to call him a gangster priest, the bearded man who threatens the elder.
The one that lost his finger?
Yeah, the one that lost his finger. He is portrayed extremely well. I think he's only a couple standout scenes. Yeah, he's a standout minor villain. A lot of the townsfolk are also portrayed in ways I've not seen many shows handle their minor appearances. If you take the scene where Trevor is in the market talking to the villagers of Gresham, each one of those characters gets one, maybe two lines, but between the animation...
Or no lines,
but between the animation and what little dialogue you get and the context, you get an idea of how each one of these characters thinks. You get an idea of who they are right away. I am blown away by how well it characterizes its minor characters. Even the two guys in the bar, you know those guys. Like, you get an idea what their day-to-day life is just from them arguing in the bar and getting in a bar fight.
The brothers and or cousins.
The brothers.
The brothers. We may have the same father, but you fell out of my hand.
Yo, shout-outs to West Virginia.
Anyway, I guess the last major character to talk about is Alucard, who's basically
Sapphire. Oh, yeah. Alucard's in this. He's got a cameo or something, right? And his name is Adrian, apparently?
I seem to zone out any time that there was any dialogue where his name was possibly mentioned. Is he even referred to as Alucard at any point on screen?
Once.
He refers to himself as Alucard once. Other than that, the only reason we know Alucard is because the subtitles say so.
He's tall, he's blonde, he's menacing.
If his hair was white instead of blonde, he'd be Sephiroth. In fact, he even looks like Alucard on the original art for Symphony of the Night, the video game. He even looks like Sephiroth. He even has a long-ass fucking narrow sword like Sephiroth that he summons to his hand. But that's for later, I guess. He's a half-vampire. He's the son of Dracula and Lisa. He's very much more like Lisa personality-wise, but more like Dracula vampire-wise.
He's aloof. He's distant, but he is certainly opposed to Dracula sending an army of demons from hell to annihilate humankind. He knows what his mother would have wanted, and it's not this. He would have preferred Dracula get revenge on the bishop alone. And Dracula physically lashed out at him, and I suppose banished him?
Yeah.
I think so.
Or either that, or he went into hiding. It's not really established.
Look, if you're physically assaulted by a parent, it's heavily implied that you're not welcome back there. You should probably call on the phone first, maybe get someone to mediate. I know domestic situations are very complicated, but take care of yourself.
This PSA is brought to you by Animated Indulgence.
Once again, rated G for Go Fucking.
Oh, God.
Oh, man, somebody fucking a goat. Now that's a domestic problem right there.
For people not in the know, that happened in the show. Not on screen, but it's referenced to one of the townspeople.
My person caught someone fucking his goat.
Yeah, hit him with a shovel. That was his response. What do you do when you find a man fucking your goat? You hit him with a shovel! Damn right I did.
For chivalry!
Shovel Knight can get behind that.
That man has a future. We just don't know it.
What, behind the goat?
Anyway.
Yeah, the fourth team member from the games, Grant Dynasty, he is not yet featured, so I'm going to assume that he appears in the next set.
I'm really wondering how major he'll be, because for me, it seems like they made a very big point of drawing, like I said, it feels very prologue-y, this first season. Like, they tried to get all the characters into place to get to go on their adventure to stop Dracula. They set all the place things and so on. It feels like they put a lot of effort into getting these three characters together. Why wouldn't they have they already implemented Grant? I don't know. We'll see. It's hard to tell from this. I just hope he's not excluded altogether. We'll see.
Yeah, I hope we see at least some of him. I don't know if he'll be in the Big Trinity, but I want to see him featured at least somewhat. It might be that because he's a thief, a pirate, whatnot, he might not be available in continuity to be in Greshit. They just might not have found, okay, well, he needs to be doing this. We cannot put him in Greshit at that time because the way his timeline works. It could be very simple. It could be very complicated. It could simply be because they didn't want to overload us with too many characters.
That's just a matter of we'll see, I guess. It's just worth noting that not a major, major character, but one of the four playable characters is missing.
I think that's about as major as you can get, really.
There's no reason, at least in the context of Castlevania 3, which this anime is based off of, he's just as a major character as Sypha or Alucard in the context of just that game. You want to move on to plot and theme?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think we already have. The theme is goat fucking.
Theme?
I'll move on then. Okay, right on to references.
Okay. Okay.
Like we already kind of recapped the plot over the course of the podcast.
Yeah. Our primary setting is mid 15th century. How do you pronounce this? Wallachia, Transylvania, I assume.
Okay, so just a preface because I didn't know the full geography of this area either. I had to double check. Wallachia is the province south and somewhat to the east of Transylvania in the real world. It was a real country. It's part of current-day Romania, I believe. It is where Vlad Tepes actually took control of the kingdom And it was indeed in the year 1476.
Which is the year that the events of the show take place.
Yeah, we start in 1455 when Lisa first meets him and go ahead 20 years.
The events are an alternate reality version of the real world in which Vlad Tepes was a technologically advanced vampire.
Instead of just the, you know, insane ruler.
He wasn't that insane. He only piked his enemies and possibly some rats.
Okay, I don't know that much about him, to be honest. If someone pikes anyone for any reason, they're probably a little insane.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Anyway.
Roger, you touched on this earlier, and I think it's worth mentioning here now. First off, it's a very anti-authoritarian show. It places a lot of emphasis on the fact that if you follow leaders, that's evil. The idea that you follow blindly, especially mob mentality, not standing up, is evil. Yeah. They hammer that home multiple times. And in fact, that's what makes Dracula a villain, because he goes off and says that one of them should have stood up and said no. It only takes
exactly,
one to break
exactly.
That.
The biggest travesty of Lisa's murder is not that the bishop made that situation happen, where the bishop said, hey, look, a witch, we need to burn her. That's not the worst part. That's fucking horrible. The bishop's a fucking asshole human being, the anti of everything he's supposed to represent as a holy man, right? When he says this. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's not the worst part. The worst part is that there's a gigantic mob of hundreds of people there just watching it happen. No one says, let's not do this. The one lady who says that they don't want to burn her goes to her house to mourn her instead.
Yeah, that's she might be the luckiest person in the show, because she goes face to face with a furious Dracula and lives to tell the tale. But now, more than that, what makes Dracula a villain is that when he says that, Alucard immediately stands up to him and tells him this is wrong. And that's when Dracula lashes out at Alucard and decides to carry on with his insane revenge plan. And that's what sets him as a villain.
Is oh, yeah. That's
the
where he's
contradiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. The contradiction in his logic is right there. You can see it on screen. The whole theme of the show is behind that. Followers that don't question are evil.
Oh, yeah. The standing by and not trying to stop something from evil from happening is almost, if not just as bad as doing it yourself. If you just let it happen and you have the power to at least oppose it, let it be known that we shouldn't be doing this, hey, this is fucking wrong, that's almost just as bad in a lot of cases, just as bad. I had another reoccurring theme that was touched on, not nearly as hard as the religion stuff, but there is a lot of themes of family bonds or family like honor, family, what you owe to family. Trevor has something that his ties to the Belmont clan, and Sypha has ties to the speaker and her ancestors and, you know, their knowledge of their people, and Alucard has, you know, wants to get revenge or stop his father. There's their ancestor and family there. I don't know. Just a thought I had.
You're spot on. I agree completely. But it celebrates lineage and focuses on the duty that comes with heritage.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it.
Thinking over how the whole thing goes and like the buildup of certain characters, like, you know, we're focusing on Dracula after he meets up with Lisa, you know, we go ahead those 20 years and then she's put on the stake and to burn and he's off on some kind of, you know, world travel or whatever, turns home to find his house or his castle, I forget which, in ruins. That old woman comes, talks to him.
It was her house.
Explain her house. Okay.
Yeah.
The old woman explains what happened. You know, some of us didn't want to do it, but yada, yada, yada. And that's where he just completely cracks and turns into a ball of flame, disappears, and he wages his vengeance on the people. You know, I'm giving you 1 year to do so-and-so, otherwise my forces are going to come and you're going to die. And yeah, that 1 year passes, and what are they doing? They're basically celebrating what they had done a year prior, and that poor priest that had to sit there as the blood was raining down on him, and then all of a sudden, here comes Dracula, flames and all, just saying, I gave you a year, what are you doing? Fuck him. So here come all the demons, and their heads are getting ripped off. Oh, God. They had it coming.
I don't know. I don't think they did. I think some of them did, but isn't one of the ideas forgiveness and defense of people who might not deserve it here and now?
Yeah. In this case, it's like, okay, you're being led by a false pretense. Some of them are just going along for the ride, whereas others are blatantly following this false hope, and that's what led to all the chaos. It's like, okay, you could have made a change, but you let things happen, and now you're listening to this bishop that is full of crap, and all of his parishioners and so forth are in on it, and got this one guy, he's missing a finger now. I wonder what happened. He's kind of a dick. Maybe we shouldn't be listening to them.
Yeah, one thing I like about this show is that there's a lot of different levels and tiers of evil in it. The bishop, like we talked about, is basically pure vitriol, pure evil. Dracula is his own tier of evil. He was trying to, it was very much implied that he was just trying to live a normal life with his wife until, you know, went off the deep end. Then we have, like, the citizens who want to stop stuff but don't say anything. We already kind of said that, like, that's almost just as bad, but it's not quite on the same level as lighting the torch yourself. There's a lot of different tiers and levels of people doing different wrongs to each other. It's not all just gigantic scope evil.
The contrasts, actually, you mentioned there, are pretty remarkable. You have this impassioned, blood-soaked, vengeful evil that Dracula brings upon the land. And then you've got this insidious, almost infectious, organized, orderly evil that the bishop brings, where he violently lashes out anything that goes against his interpretations of the scripture. He takes no pleasure in destroying anything, but he's joyless. He's, I don't know, almost soulless.
It's very creepy, his characterization. How much he... You're right, he doesn't take pleasure in it. He's not doing it because he gets off on it or something. He just... It's weird. It's an evil, you know, the bad guys never think they're the bad guys.
Yeah, he thinks he's doing the right thing when he's doing the wrong thing.
Actually, that also highlights one of the other things. It also uses this idea of myth and superstition and belief and leverages them in a way that makes society as a whole wicked, while no individual necessarily is, or very few individuals are.
I guess the point we're trying to get across is it plays with the themes of what is evil in a lot of different ways. Lots of different types of evil people in this show.
Oh, also, speaking of society, I find it interesting that the heroes are all outcasts fighting for society. Even though they're outsiders, they find it within themselves or decide to fight for the benefit of the whole.
Yeah, good point.
We have a half-vampire, we have an excommunicated noble, and a minority wizard who would be persecuted as a witch.
Mm-hmm.
All the people that they basically would like to kill are the ones like trying to save their lives.
We play Town of Salem, we know what it's like.
I hope we see some unity grown between them over this fact, too. I don't think it was by accident that they presented them.
Especially between Trevor and the speakers as a whole.
Yeah. I think there's some bond between Trevor and the speakers as a group, but I want to see some individual bonds between the characters now.
Oh yeah, the main three that we have so far.
I'd also like to just mention one of the big plot points, the climax of these first four episodes, the story arc, when Greshit is besieged by the demon armies of Dracula. Trevor is put in a position where all the opposition against him has been removed, and he takes control of the situation and starts leading the people. That is a wonderful scene where they mount a defense against these demons and start fighting back. That's probably my favorite scene from the entire four-episode season.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. These four episodes are stuffed with a lot of iconic scenes, actually. I'll go into that a little bit later in the art section, maybe. There's a lot of very memorable stuff, at least to me.
Are you ready to move on, or would you like to talk a bit more about the plot?
Yeah, the plot from there, we've already kind of maybe sprinkled out, but we kind of covered it all.
For the most part.
Lisa dies, Dracula releases a curse, or the promise of a curse a year later. He comes back a year later, and they're basically celebrating Lisa's death. So all hell breaks loose. Literally, demons are flying everywhere. People are dying. You see fucking innards flying everywhere. People were being decimated by these demons.
Influences, inspirations, and references then?
Obviously, sure. The big one is the games. Throw that out there. There's tons of references to the games. The whole inspiration for this anime in particular is the games, right? The games themselves are inspired by, say, Bram Stoker's Dracula or the Dracula stories in general, but this in particular is based on the games. the third Castlevania game for the NES in particular. And like I said, there's tons of references. Pretty much every time Trevor picks up a weapon that's not his whip, he's using a sub-weapon from one of the games. This includes a cross, an axe, knives, holy water, salt. So there's all that. There's one that you pointed out, Deus, that I thought was really cool. A room for the game Symphony of the Night.
Oh, yeah. The laboratory that Dracula presents to Lisa in the first episode is a heavy reference to the laboratory in Symphony of the Night. You can see a lot of the same apparatus there.
It's kind of neat.
I've mostly watched Castlevania games. I think the only one that I've outright played is Castlevania 64, which I wasn't quite into back when I rented it as a teenager.
Terrible.
Skeletons on motorcycles. What the hell were they thinking? But yeah, depending on how far this series goes, so Castlevania 3 was already considered a prequel, so maybe it will start to follow the events of the first film or the second eventually. As the story continues, we'll have to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to get sequel series based on Simon, but
we've already got hints at backstory established and stuff as late as the PS2 games. Credit to GOG, a friend of ours, is the one that pointed out to me that at one point in I think the third episode, Dracula's life before Dracula is indirectly referenced, which points out to the established backstory in one of the PS2 Castlevania games where Dracula wasn't always Dracula. He was a normal human man before he became a vampire and changed his name, which is a neat little thing. That's a very obscure little piece of world building that could be easily ignored. It's a nice touch.
Obviously, the games that it follows most heavily are Castlevania 3 and some Symphony of the Night.
Definitely has some references to stuff that was set as canon in Symphony of the Night. I guess it could have been implied to have happened after the fact. I'm not sure exactly how all the game's timelines mesh up. So stuff that happened in Symphony of the Night could have been implied to have happened during the same time as Castlevania 3. I'm not sure.
One thing in particular is in Symphony of the Night, Alucard does have a nightmare in which he sees Lisa burned at the stake. In his nightmare, he's being manipulated by a monster, and Lisa instead instructs him to take vengeance upon humans and to hate them, where he denies this, and it was actually...
Like, that's not the way it happened.
His lines from the game are actually transferred into Lisa in the show.
A lot of nice touches and references to the games. There's also, we've already touched on this a little bit, I guess it can be thrown into references, and inspirations at least. Real world history, Vlad the Impaler, the guy that, you know, the story of Dracula,
is based off of,
you know, is a real life person. He existed, like, obviously, way fictionalized version of him established here, but he is a person.
Indeed. I was surprised to find that there was more reference to Vlad Tepes than there was Bram Stoker's Dracula, with the idea of that being in Wallachia and not Transylvania. The year 1476 being a very prominent year in his life. In fact, Targoviste was the real-life capital of Wallachia at the time. It's a real city. I don't think Greshit is. I actually looked this up. I was trying to find it, but my research ability over such a short time on ancient Romanian geography is a little shaky. Sorry. I did find out that Greshit is the Romanian word for wrong or bad.
Interesting.
Also, the Speaker Clan is a clear reference to Roma gypsies.
Yep, which that's the homeland of those people. Like,
they're nomadic, but
nomadic, but you know that's the region they nomaded in.
Yeah, they're also representative of any number of minorities that would have been outcast by the church at the time. I think that was a very clear reference, is that they are meant to be Roma gypsies.
Mentioned, even though it has more to do with the real world Vlad Tepes than Bram Stoker's Dracula, there is, you can't escape it when you make something set in a era like this about Dracula. Bram Stoker's is the go-to. You know, there's going to be references. There's going to be
absolutely
a callback. You can't escape it when you're dealing with this era of vampires.
It's more referential to modern vampire stories than it is classical ones. It's definitely got some references and some tones built from stuff like Vampire Hunter D and Helsing. Far more than the original novel that inspired it all It's, let's say, one or two levels removed from that.
Yeah. It's definitely removed, but the inspiration's still there.
Its main villain's called Dracula, of course it is.
Yep.
Other than that, there's also a lot of classic horror films, which of course also inspired the games. That's why you fight stuff like The Mummy and Frankenstein and Wolfman in the games.
I'm hoping we'll see more of that.
We saw cool gargoyle demon things. We saw a evil cyclops that turns you to stone and eats your ear. I think the humans are actually far more inspired by classic horror, the townsfolk.
Oh, yeah.
The violent, bumbling, mistrustful people.
Speaking of the townspeople, I really like how it's established in the show itself, but in the games as well. But the very few times in the games where you talk to townspeople, they establish that they don't think very highly of the Belmonts. And so all the townspeople, sometimes when they realized that he was a Belmont, spoke down on him. It's a nice little touch reference to the actual games.
I know there's probably a lot of parallels between this and Game of Thrones, but as I understand, this entered development before Game of Thrones became a big hit. Probably some later development stuff was influenced by it, but the fact that it's dark medieval style drama says enough that this was probably greenlit because of Game of Thrones. I don't know if there's any real influence from the show, but or the books, but I could imagine the books being a slight influence. The creators have gone on record saying Berserk, Ninja Scroll, and Young Justice were influences. I don't see a lot of Young Justice in there. I've seen that show. I'm not sure at what level it was influential, possibly in character designs and in group dynamics. I have seen Ninja Scroll many years ago. I don't remember it that vividly, but I could definitely see some of the tension in battle based on that, and also some of the gore and violence. Berserk, obviously, is a big source of nightmare horror and psychological horror, and I think that fits the hordes of Dracula very well.
I already talked a little bit. I don't know if it's a direct influence, but I saw hints of like the super goriness of stuff like Attack on Titan.
Well, again, Attack on Titan was not even shared released influence. By the time they're... Shared influences, yeah.
Maybe that's the what I'm seeing here.
That's a good point. I think they would be contemporaries. They're both sort of the children of Berserk in that sense.
I guess that's a good way for us to put stuff in, that falls into that category. Not direct influence itself, but shared influences, contemporaries. You guys want to move on to music and sound?
Absolutely.
So there's a little bit to be said about the music itself, and that it's not terrible. There's certain kind of games, especially of this era, that have such iconic music associated with them. Almost as much as the gameplay, you associate the music with them. At least I know I feel that way about a lot of game music. I feel that at least you two as well, Deus. There's so much good Castlevania music from the video games that could have been implemented, and none is. I don't know if that's licensing issues. I don't know if that's a design choice. It's just a little disappointing, at least to me. I would have loved to hear any of the iconic tunes. Bloody Tears or Vampire Hunter or what? I think it's Vampire Killer? I don't know. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a shame. It's not that the music itself is bad. It's just... It would have been nice to have at least some callback to the very iconic music of the games.
Like a lot of the other shows, I'm so entranced into the plot and the characters that I tend to zone out some of the music, and I would have to probably say I enjoyed what I can remember.
Trevor Morris did the work on the score, and he did fine work, by the way. He put together some wonderful atmospheric tunes for this.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's just...
But Trevor Morris, shame on you, sir. If you were listening to this, shame on you, Trevor Morris. The first piece you should have worked on was an orchestral rendition of Vampire Killer. I don't know what I was listening to during the one opening credit sequence they had in episode one, but it wasn't Vampire Killer. It wasn't Bloody Tears. It wasn't Heart of Fire. What are you doing? You had one job. It was also mostly done for you by someone in Japan 25 years ago.
It's kind of a big shame.
The small little atmospheric tunes that keep things from being too silent are absolutely wonderful. But the big moments, not having any of those iconic Castlevania sounds, cripples the soundtrack. Yeah. It's not even the fact that it's bad. It's the fact that the expectations are set by the name Castlevania, and you don't get what you pay for in sound direction. I hope that it's because all the money went into the absolutely wonderful voice cast, because they deserve it.
For the show as a whole, the music, just not necessarily because of the quality of the music itself, but because of the expectations you have of something being associated with Castlevania, the music is probably the biggest letdown of the show to me.
It's like going and watching a documentary on Guns N' Roses and not hearing a single song by Guns N' Roses.
That's a good way to put it. It'd be very, very awkward. It'd be very...
And granted, I'm not a fan of Guns N' Roses, but if I was to see a documentary based on it, I would certainly expect that to happen. Whether I'm a fan or not, there's an expectation set.
If they came out with a Mega Man anime, like I'm gonna hold similar expectations. Maybe it doesn't have to be ripped straight from the shows or the games into Mega Man. But when we get to the Mega Man cartoon, I'm gonna hold it to similar expectations. You have a lot of good music to sample. Use it in some way, or it's gonna be a disappointment.
Now, with that said, we never got voices in the Castlevania video games. Not most of them, anyway. Symphony of the Night was one of the first ones. Alucard obviously isn't as deep as he is in that game, but he's also younger, Alucard. So I will let that one slide. And otherwise, the voices fit the characters very well.
Oh, yeah. Like we already talked about, I really loved Dracula's voice performance, and the lead speaker's voice.
The elder speaker. See, to me, he's the standout. I love Dracula, but the elder speaker is the standout performance for me. Such a likable character, performed so well, is a joy. And I don't think any of the characters, not even bit parts, not even little one-line townspeople, are performed poorly. If there was one stigma attached to Castlevania voice acting by the opening scene of Symphony of the Night, the What Is a Man scene, this shattered that. Castlevania voice acting is superb.
The sound direction itself, basic background sounds and stuff, is all... It's passable. I wrote in my notes, it's fair. That's basically all I could sum it up to say about the sound direction itself. Did you guys have more to say about it?
I thought the sound effects were actually excellent, but they slipped under your radar so often. I think the scene that I really noticed where the sound effects stood out was when Trevor left the House of the Seekers in Greshit, when he shut the creaky wooden door and took a bite from the apple. And I don't think the sound effects in any of the episodes, any of the scenes, were especially bad. I just think that they don't jump out at you.
It's very subtle. Maybe that's...
It's very subtle.
Subtle is good. It's there, and it's just enough to make you avoid the awkwardness of having no sound effects.
There's no inappropriate slide whistles or boops.
Yeah. All pretty basic. They didn't fuck it up, basically, is what we're saying. That's what I'm saying.
I guess the voice cast being mostly British also leads back into that classic horror movie feel, sort of like the Hammer horror films, especially the Hammer Dracula movies.
Very time period appropriate, too. Has to give that feel.
I guess they would all technically be speaking what, Austrian or Hungarian at the time, but the point is, if we're going to hear this in English, then some sort of accent native to the continent would be appropriate. It's got a class about it.
Adds a bit of something exotic. You want to move on to art?
Art and visuals.
It was beautiful. Extremely well done. The monsters look menacing.
The choreographed fights are spectacular to look at. There's a little bit of a lacking in animation on some scenes. I noticed one of the bar fights where one of the guys clubs Trevor over the head with a chair looked really shoddily animated to my eye, at least. The swinging of it, the character himself is like almost pinned, unnaturally stationary, and his arms just kind of swing in this locked motion. It looks very unnatural.
I see what you mean.
There's a few things like that, but like where it's important, the fight scenes and the facial expression, especially with, say, the bishop. Some of those details on that bishop's face when it was zoomed up on him and he's all fucking crazy, fucking going insane with his anger. There's a lot of time and effort put into that art.
It's wonderful. Even in the first episode, the guy he gets in a bar fight with has a wonderfully expressive face. I think the faces in this show are extraordinary. Except for Trevor himself. For whatever reason, Trevor is in a more simplified style. I don't know if he was locked into his character model early in production, or if they had someone else do the master for him that didn't do most of the characters. He is not in the same style as the ordinary people, and in that sense, the townsfolk look so much better than the main character. I don't know why they did that. I wish they would have made a decision. Maybe it was easier to animate him that way. I really couldn't tell you, but he doesn't quite match the rest of the show.
Yeah, he has like this almost scruffily drawn feature about him. I won't necessarily say it's bad, but it's definitely like maybe a notch down from the rest.
Actually, let me take it back. It's not bad. It's stylistically jarring. It's a good look, but it doesn't fit the rest of the show. It is a whole different style from the rest of the show. And maybe that helps set him apart. Maybe they want him to look different. Maybe they want him to stand out from the crowd. It might be a choice. It might not be. But he does not look as detailed.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it. Like, where another character's like beard would have been drawn finely detailed, lots of emphasis on details on the beard and the face itself. Trevor's beard is drawn roughly with a couple lines.
I would liken it to take a Cowboy Bebop character and place him in Attack on Titan, and that's Trevor. It's that's really well made. It's really cool looking and slick.
Hey, Airhammer, you're good at Photoshop. Okay. Make this happen. Let's get Spike fighting. Let's get Spike Photoshop running away from some Titans. We'll have a link Spike in the description. And that's his name, right?
Okay.
Spike the Cowboy Bebop. That's the lead character's name in Cowboy Bebop, right? It's been a while, but
okay. Spike Spiegel. Yes.
Yeah. You had me doubt myself there for a moment.
No, I was just chuckling. I'm sorry.
No, Airhammer's like, Spike.
Yeah, Spike.
Yeah, not that Spike, this Spike. exclamation mark Spike.
I'd like to talk just a minute about the animation before we get off on our next wild tangent.
Sure.
Much like you mentioned the little stiffness in the bar fight, there are moments where you see a static character with mouth flaps, but I think it's punctuated enough by moving arms and intentional gestures that it doesn't feel cheap. What I would like to see from a perfect anime is subtle shoulder movements and stance shifts where the body is always moving along with the character, but that's really expensive and difficult to animate. And I think what they did here was well done enough. They paid attention to it without going overboard, and I appreciate that. I like when animation works to the benefit of expression during speech, so a monologue isn't just moving lips with a static screen. And in this case, it certainly is. They do a lot of cuts. They do a lot of arm gestures. They'll shift around while they're talking.
There's a lot of moving camera stuff. I had a thought, but it's gone for a moment.
Would you mind then if I talked a bit about color?
Yeah, go ahead.
Would anyone else like to talk about animation first? Because I think it's really well animated.
Oh, very.
For a show about vampires and the armies of the night, I think the primary color you see is orange. Sunsets and sunrises are used very frequently, and you see the city and people lit by candlelight and by the rays of the sunset a lot. I would say orange is the primary color you see, fading into some rosy pinks.
That's kind of a nice observation, because orange is a very highlight, big color in the original Castlevania games for the NES, remember? Iconic orange levels with orange tiles, and like Simon or Trevor or whatever character it is that you play at one point is a orange block of a character. It's always been a very iconic color for Castlevania.
In fact, if you look at a still of Trevor, I think most of the stills have the white fur of his cloak fade into pink just briefly before it goes into its blue-gray shade. And I appreciate that quite a lot. But it's very frequently seen as a color of light. You see orange all the time, and once in a while you'll see red, but it's not nearly as prominent as you would expect in a show like Castlevania. I think they save red.
Yeah, I was just about to say they're saving it, because you don't see any red almost at all until like in that first episode until it fucking rains blood. Go back and rewatch it.
They like to use color in this show, and I really do appreciate their gradient from white to orange to rosy pink to blue-gray to black that you see on almost every surface.
I'll have to go look at it again to get the full effect, but I'm trying to visualize it. Neat observation.
You talked earlier about the fights. Would you like to talk more about that in the animation part?
Yeah, I guess that's one thing I did want to talk about at one point, is that they're all very well choreographed. Every fight that happens, you could tell they didn't nonchalantly throw it together. They really, really thought and planned out about how the characters were going to move and react to each other. It's all just very fluid and works really well. The fight scenes are really, the few that we've gotten so far, are really nicely done. It was a blast to watch Trevor and Alucard duke it out while Alucard teleporting around and whipping sword shenanigans going along. It was a blast.
Yeah, that one stood out the most to me.
The little bit of money they saved by being a little cheapy, cheezo with the dialogue scenes. We talked about like seeing a little bit of mouth flap stuff. If we had to see a little bit of that in order to get the high quality fight scenes we got, I'm glad they put the money where they did, at least, because they're really great.
For me, I enjoyed that they were a little slower paced than you typically see, because it was easier to follow and it made the movements and the subtlety of the movements more important. It felt not realistic, but it felt in a pace that could have been realistic. You don't see people jumping out and moving at light speed. You don't see people breaking the sound barrier with their swords.
I don't know about Korra, but Avatar is what I would compare it to. It's not as structured as the fighting it was in Avatar, but like I said, it feels choreographed almost. And you put it well, too. It's not super fast-paced action where you can't tell what the hell's going on. There's a fluidity to it, and the fights in The Last Airbender felt that way, too.
Special commendation for the director for the camera work in the fights, because despite several cuts in camera angle, you can always tell who is where in relation to each other and the set. I especially want to call out the scene where Trevor fights the priests off from beating up the elder. That scene uses a lot of cuts back and forth from different ends of the alley, and you never have any questions of who is where. Nobody ever moves to a different location.
It's really awesomely done. They paid attention to the subtle details of that. It'd be really easy to fuck up when you're cutting between. Yeah, it's a nice touch. Anything else we want to talk about in art?
There was one thing I wanted to talk about. This is an anime, right?
Yeah, feels very anime.
Well, the thing is, this is an anime, but it was made by the people, the production company that did Adventure Time. Avatar isn't anime to you, if you've got a very strict opinion of what is anime or not, this is going to be confusing for you. This might draw the line.
For me, Avatar has always been anime, but yeah, that's going to be a thing for a lot of people to question, for sure.
If there's a person out there who's got a very strict opinion of what is anime and what is not, Castlevania might be the show that makes them redefine what is anime and what is not, because it is an American production.
I'm curious, maybe we could do a little listener interaction here. If you guys are listening to this somewhere and you've seen the show, do you think it's anime? I want to know.
For that matter, drop us a tweet, leave us a YouTube comment, something. Let us know what you think anime is.
Do you want to just move on to final thoughts?
I can if you guys don't have anything else to say.
I don't know. Once my notes run out, I get a little quiet, yeah. not much art for the art section. What would you say was your favorite scene or line from the show?
I don't know about line, but definitely my favorite scene is kind of, I don't know, it's all elongated. I really, really love the opening arc, if you will. Dracula and Lisa's spur romance slash like fucking tragedy. I really love that whole thing. And as a piece of media itself, I think it's great just alone. I'm glad there's more. Don't get me wrong. I would have been disappointed. But at the same time, that contained in itself was a great piece of media for me. I think it would have been cool to have that as a bonus thing attached to like a Symphony of the Night release or something. If that's all we ever got out of this, I think that would have been a cool piece of media. I'm glad we got more. So yeah, that very much, I really loved it. It's tragic in all the right ways. It's emotional. It sets up a great villain with real motives and a reason to feel, to realize, yes, he's evil, but also feel bad for him. It just does so much good. It does it really well. So I really like the opening scene.
I loved this, the resistance of the Siege of Greshit. That was definitely my favorite scene. It does everything animation is supposed to do. It gives us action that would have been very difficult to do otherwise outside of being animated. It shows us what the characters are doing. It helps the characters be identified and helps identify their progression as they continue in the struggle through their actions and not through words. It shows a very clear goal. It's wonderful. I love the moment when Trevor is setting up the peasants with spears, and then it pays off almost instantly where he has the second row pale the demon that's leaping towards them. It's wonderful.
My favorite was, it's just after the church and townspeople had busted in the door and they encounter Trevor and they're like, where are the speakers? And he's like, oh, I put them somewhere safe. And we have this quick cut down in the depths where they're next to the Cyclops corpse. And they're like, did it just move? I got a good laugh out of that. It's very short, but yeah, very funny.
Yeah, it's one. Actually, I think one of the only clear, abrupt cutaways. I think it's the only one, actually, from the main narrative at the time. It's like the only time they do a throwaway joke like that. It's better for it. If they had done it all the time or been a once an episode thing, it would have been lost its value really quick. But since it's a one off thing, I liked it as well.
What is something that you would like to see in the next episodes?
Frankenstein.
Okay.
Or, you know, or any of the classic oldies, the monsters from that are featured in the games. Frankenstein, the mummy, a werewolf, death. We gotta see death. Come on. We've already talked about, Deus and I talked about this one of our viewings. We've watched this thing. I watched this thing 3 times, for the record. We talked about it on one of our viewings that there needs to be death. Come on, that's gotta happen at some point, right? It's gonna be a shame if it doesn't.
Hopefully when they get inside the castle proper.
A proper clock tower? Like, we already had some jumping along gears and shit, but a proper clock tower would be nice, like with, you know, actual clock motifs. Maybe that could be with death as well. That's stuff I'd like to see. Mostly I want to see them. They've already done very well of paying homage to the games while doing world building and making it something of its own. I'd like to see more of the same. Like, I want to see a Medusa head. I like that they kind of tied the platforming aspects into the show. I like maybe more of that. You know, they're always falling down shit. There's a couple scenes where they're hopping along. They're literally jumping around doing platforming. It's a very neat little homage to the games. I talked about it in my expectations, and I'll say more here. I'm glad that they lived up to my expectations. I'm glad that they're not forgetting that it's based on a video game. They're paying a lot of homage and respect to that. It's neat. It's a piece of video game media done well. So I guess that's my final thoughts.
Well, we're not on final thoughts just yet, but what I want to see...
Basically, that sums up my final thoughts.
We're getting there. I want to see what happens to Greshit. I want them to leave Greshit in a better position than they found it. I want the demon hordes to be dealt with, or at least the people of Greshit be able to defend themselves before they move on to Targovishta and Castlevania. I want to see a direct line from Greshit to Targovishta into Castlevania. I don't want them to go around to every single city and try to save it. I don't want it to drag on like that. The pacing is too good for them to waste time on secondary targets. If they want to show me the journey, that's fine, but make every step of the way feel like it's directly toward that goal.
It's definitely going to be important for them to keep up the pacing.
If this is more than 4 seasons total, I'll be a little disappointed. I want it to continue and not drag on and reach a conclusion. Because we know this isn't the last story that is in the Castlevania franchise.
Yeah, it should definitely be handled. Thinking on it like how it's been shown so far, it'd be nice if they handle it. Have this show be Trevor's story. And if they want to do more with it later, start off a spinoff show or whatever and say, hey, this is Simon's story, or this is the story of one of the other Belmonts, or because there's a plethora of them. They should definitely keep it concise.
I'd like to see one of the weirder references from Castlevania 2. Even if they just do a quick nod or something subtle. Certainly, because it is not a video game, we're not going to just see a sudden text box pop up in the air as the time of day is changing, but it would be kind of funny if they were to reference it differently, but in the same context. Or if we were to see, I don't know, maybe a notable NPC, such as the woman that Simon encounters in the house that just says, let's live here together, or something like that. I don't know. Just something silly to throw off the tone of the show, for even if it's just for a few seconds.
I think they will do that too, and they've already have what your favorite scene is already. The scene
yes.
with the you want more of that.
Yeah. Not so much of it, but every so often just pop in something that will get a really good chuckle out of you.
Yeah. It's nice when you don't have to fully commit to something super serious. When you can expect a chuckle or a laugh every once in a while.
Are we ready to go on to final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess. Sure. I am. I kind of already summed up what my thoughts were, but...
Well, do you want to expand on that any?
Let me think on it for a bit.
I think, given the length of the show right now, for season one, if you want to wait, you can. It's not something you have to jump on. It is a very good show, but for me, it falls a little short of being great, at least so far. The low episode count holds it back from really getting its grip on me. It doesn't really find its mark just yet, but it's got a lot of promise. If you want to watch it now, really easy to watch it all. It's the length of a movie. You don't have to catch up any. If you want to wait and binge watch it, that I think will also be a valid strategy for viewing this. I wouldn't skip it, though. I think what we get out of the first four episodes tells me this is one that you probably want to keep your eyes on at some point.
I just loved what I saw, and I would like it if the next set were maybe a tad longer. I don't know, 6 episodes, 8 episodes. You got a good thing going here. Don't ruin it.
All three of us are going to hammer home on this point, aren't we? I guess what I've been thinking about my final thoughts as well. We got 4 episodes, right? Of what I've seen, I really like so far, right? But I don't think there's ever been a show where I've just watched 4 episodes and I'm like, okay, I'm committed to the rest of this. I've always wanted to go for a little bit further, right? So we don't even get that in the first season. So I guess I'm going to expand on it. Yeah, we need more. It's good. What we've seen so far is great, and I have high expectations for the rest. But we can't really commit to that yet because we haven't seen where they're going with it. Hopefully, it continues going on as well as it has. Impressed with what we've got so far. You guys want to close it out?
Unlike a vampire, this show doesn't suck.